what do we do with Mary of Nazareth? Basically, since the time of Jesus, his followers have been struggling to figure her out. The gospel writers aren't particularly helpful. In Mark, our earliest gospel, she's only mentioned by name once. And in John, our latest gospel, she's only referred to as Jesus' mother. And throughout the Bible, we see that only characters deemed important by the writers are given names. When we think of the classic Christmas story, the one we interpret in our pageants and nativity scenes, it is generally a mashup between Matthew and Luke. In Matthew, however, it is Joseph who is the main actor. It is to him the angel comes. It is only in the Gospel of Luke, which we heard Sarah read from, that Mary is given any kind of meaningful role. So from this ambiguity and even contradiction with within the Gospels, we have seen the church struggle with what to do with Mary. We can agree that she is Jesus' mother, but other than that, she is an enigma in our faith. Within some Christian traditions, Mary is held up as the model woman, which in that understanding is submissive and obedient. Mary, mother, meek and mild. Sometimes she's venerated to a place of devotion and worship. Shrines to her are places of pilgrimage that millions travel to in hopes of healing and comfort. Within Protestant denominations like ours, where we do not pray to her or have icons to her on our walls, our engagement with Mary, if there is engagement at all, is often limited to intellectual arguments, like whether she really was a virgin or not. As the theologian James Luck Jr. puts it, too frequently we ignore or minimize her, making her a porcelain figurine in our nativity set, fragile, breakable, and boxed away for most of the year. When we pull her out, we do not actually interact with her. Yes, she helps us feel nostalgic, but in the end, she changes nothing. I wonder what we are missing or losing by taking this approach. What would happen if we actually took her out of the box and considered the lived experience of this young Jewish woman living on the edge of the Roman Empire in a time of occupation and oppression? What it would have been like for her within a patriarchal culture, for her to be pregnant without a husband, without status or power of any kind, to live with the questions and judgments and sideways glances in the streets. Setting aside debates over virgin birth and the existence of angels, what kind of courage would it have taken for this young woman to stare into the face of societal expectations and norms and to answer that kind of call, to be that vulnerable, that real? These were the questions my wife Brianne asked herself when she wrote the song "May It Be" that we played just before this message. It was a project of Rosedale United Church, where we were members at that time, and it was first sung for that congregation in 2011. And Brianne was very pregnant with our first child at the time. She and both of us were filled with excitement and anticipation and honestly fear at that time. Would the baby be okay? Would we be okay parents? How would this change our lives? And these feelings came out in Brianne's interpretation of Mary's story. She sings with Mary's voice, "So now I sit by the water and pray by the water and rock by the shore. For my child who is coming, love and terror that's calling, the fear and angst of the unknown." The next year she sang the song again, but this time we had Isaiah with us. He and I swayed to the music in the back of the church. And she brought her lived experience, now as a mother, into her offering of Mary's story, abundant and generous and bold. And then 2 years later, she was asked by Rosedale again to sing "May It Be." But this time it would be quite different. You see, we'd been trying for our second baby and found out weeks before that Brianne was pregnant again. But just before this fourth Sunday in Advent, Mary Sunday, Brianne experienced a miscarriage, and we lost the pregnancy. And carrying that loss into Mary's story, she could barely make it through the song. Love and terror that's calling, the fear and angst of the unknown. As she finished the song crying now, she got up to leave, and something so moving happened that it still gets me emotional just thinking about it. Reverend Karen Bowles, who was one of the ministers at Rosedale at that time, got up from her seat and moved towards Brianne and embraced her. A long, deep, and generous hug right in the middle of the chancel. There can be times in our worship services when it feels like we are going through the motions. Stand up, sit down, move here, light this candle, say these words. There are reasons why we do this, good reasons, but without real engagement with our traditions and rituals, they can become religious theater, like porcelain figurines, brittle, inanimate, and separate from the lived experience of God's people. But what happened on that day was the exact opposite of that. Karen, who had no idea what was going on in our lives, instantly recognized a need in Brianne and went to her, arms wide open. It was real, and it was holy, and it was church at its absolute best. It was a moment of grace. But if you look at the arc of Christian history, it was also quite rare. Showing that kind of vulnerability in the I'm okay, you're okay culture is rare. Embodying the gospel story in such a raw and tangible way is rare. And most unjustly, having two women leaders in the chancel of a church is rare. There are forms of Christianity, even to this day, where women are explicitly excluded from the ministry. And even in traditions like ours, where women can and are encouraged to take on leadership roles, they are often subject to different standards and expectations than their male colleagues. Differences in what they earn, judgments on what they wear, inequality on how their accomplishments are valued, disparity in how their voices are heard and respected. Undoubtedly, this goes beyond church, but in these places where we take on the weight and responsibility of interpreting God's will to humanity, we need to set ourselves to a higher standard. And so how we see female figures in the Bible, like Mary of Nazareth, matters. It matters if we see her as naive or brave, a submissive vessel or an active partner, a symbol of unattainable feminine perfection in a Costco nativity set, or a real woman with real struggles and fears, real passions and gifts. The Christian writer, Reverend Nancy Rockwell, says that the subjugation of Mary, the maligning of her as meek, mild, and mindless, has been harmful to millions of women over many centuries. Hidden within the wonder of Christmas are 1,000 years of doctrinal female subjugation, doctrines that, like tinsels, are dripped over all over this season. In the midst of our worship services, these malicious ideas keep women from feeling empowered and strong and urged by God to imagine new ways to live as Mary did, who mothered God's redemption into the world. The well-known prayer of petition translates the angel Gabriel's first words to Mary as, "Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee." Mary, full of grace. Before there was a star in the sky or a baby in the manger or shepherds or any of that, Mary was already full of grace. She was already whole, already full of God's own love and life. Grace is not about submission or subjugation. It's about the power of God, which is never meek or mild. It's Mary's grace, her boldness, her courage that has attracted God's attention. The angel's invitation and her independent decision tells us that Mary does not need permission to become pregnant, not from a husband or her parents or the clergy. The decision is hers, and she makes it. She says yes to the incarnation. Yes to the partnership between heaven and earth. Yes to becoming, yes to God becoming flesh within her own flesh. She makes the choice to be a mother, to bear into life not some porcelain figurine from a nativity set, but a real child. She chooses to live with the hard questions that all parents must live with. Would the baby be okay? Would she be a good parent? How would this change her life? Mary also chooses to trust in God, to accept the fragility of human life and to live with that worry that one day something could happen to her child. She could lose him. For my child who is coming, love and terror that's calling, the fear and angst of the unknown, here I am. May it be. Mary, chosen by God for her independent and adventuresome spirit, chooses to bear a child with a holy mission. And then, leaning into her Jewish heritage, immediately sets out a bold and revolutionary vision. She sings about bringing the mighty down from their thrones, scattering the proud, filling the hungry with good things, and sending the rich away empty. The Magnificat, as it is known, is the last of four similar songs in the Bible by four different women. The song of Miriam in Exodus, the song of Deborah in Judges, the song of Hannah in 1 Samuel, and now Mary's song in Luke. Each of these women plays a key role in the story of ancient Israel, and each of their songs is placed in the biblical narrative at a key point in the history of the nation. Each of these songs cries out for liberation. They are protest songs. They are songs that call on the turning of the world towards justice and freedom. Mary's bold cry to bring down the mighty from their thrones has been deemed so subversive, so dangerous to those in power that these words from an unwed Jewish teenager have actually been banned from being recited in worship and in public in countries such as India and Guatemala and Argentina. The German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that the Song of Mary is the oldest, the most passionate, the wildest, and the most revolutionary Advent hymn ever sung. Through the partnership of flesh and spirit, Mary of Nazareth would be the bearer of God's reconciling justice for the world. She would be the bearer of the one who comes in solidarity with the lowly, the poor, and the oppressed. Mary's son would be the one to turn over the money changers' tables, to call out the religious elites as a brood of vipers, to be in relationship with the ignored, the outcast, and the despised, to stare in the face of violence and death and choose to trust in God. Where do you think he learned that? Where do you think Jesus learned that? In September of 2014, our son Simon was born. And so the next time Brianne sung May It Be, our family would be complete. And once again, she would bring her own lived experience into Mary's story, her own journey as a mother who had experienced joy and loss, her strength as a social justice activist, her wisdom as a leader in the church. And I am just so grateful that my boys have such a strong, bold, compassionate, intelligent woman as their mother. And they have other women in the church and beyond the church that they can learn from and be in healthy relationship with. While on this Sunday, we acknowledge and honor Mary's role as God-bearer, I think her story beckons all of us. Women, men, boys, girls, non-binary, all of us, to be bearers of God's love and justice in the world. The 13th century mystic Meister Eckhart says that we are all called to be mothers of God, for God is always waiting to be born. The incarnation is the partnership of flesh and spirit. It is God made manifest in real life, in real choices and real actions we make in justice and kindness. Her name was Mary. Her vision was bold, and her story matters. before we put away the porcelain figurines from our nativity set this year, let us be inspired by her, empowered by her, and maybe even changed by her. I end now with the words of Jennifer Henry, who brought her own experience as the executive director of Kairos to Mary's story. This is her reimagining of the popular Advent song, "Mary, Did You Know?" Mary, did you know that your ancient words would still leap off our pages? Mary, did you know that your spirit song would echo through the ages? Did you know that your holy cry would be subversive word, that the tyrants would be trembling when they knew your truth was heard? Mary, did you know that your lullaby would stir your own child's passion? Mary, did you know that your song inspires the work of liberation? The truth will teach, the drum will sound, healing for the pain. The poor will rise, the rich will fall, hope will live again. May it be. May it be.